Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear Blog Talk Radio Program. I am your host, Susan, Laris, and Danz, although today it's going to be a little bit unusual because I am not exactly the host. I'm actually going to be the guest. At the request of our recurring guest, who is Dr. Robert Forman, I'm really quite touched and truly honored in a way by his request to talk to me about my journey, because he and I have had some really deep conversations on this show, and I certainly invite you to listen to some of those conversations if you haven't heard them yet. And this will be an opportunity to go even deeper, to use the terminology he has used with his own work. Now, I will intro him briefly in case you haven't heard him on previous shows here. Dr. Robert Forman is the author of Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be, as well as many other books. And that is an award-winning book that was quite highly acclaimed, including by Jack Canfield and all kinds of spiritual way showers. A very deep, personal, insightful book. And Robert is also a professor of comparative religions, and he has 20 years experience in that role with a PhD from Columbia University focused on mystical experience and professorships at City University of New York and Vassar College. And he brings to us now, since he's been on the show a few times, I'd say 39 plus years of exploring spiritual enlightenment, and he's interacted with the most amazing people on his path. And that's why I have to say I really am touched and honored to have someone like Robert, who I feel really comfortable with as well, to talk to me about my journey. And so without further delay, I'm going to bring him on the line. Hello, Bob. Welcome back.
Hi, Susan. It's really nice to be here, and it is an interesting adventure we're entering into.
It is.
Let me say something by way of introduction of how this came about, so that the listeners are not too confused here. I think this is my fifth or sixth time being on your show. I'm not sure. I was trying to count them up in my head, and I find that the show is always thoughtful, and you're looking for real contact with people. You look for what is deeply meaningful. You're always kind of creative in how you go about doing this. And you listen pretty well. That is to say, when your guest speaks, you're actually responding to what they say. It's not, you don't have these pre-canned questions, but you have, you know, the ability to listen and zone in and do it well. And I think you bring a richness of your own experience and your own life into the conversations that I very much appreciate. And so I was interested in, and I figured if I was interested, other people were. I was interested in finding out more about you. You've been very generous with your time to find out more about my own life and my path and whatnot. And I found myself wondering what was going on there. And so I wanted to interview you on my behalf, but also on behalf of the listeners who probably feel pretty much the same as me, which is, well, who is this woman and how did she come about this and whatnot? And so what I'd like to do is I'd like to focus in on your story, and not so much the, you know, born in such and such a town, but mm-hmm. rather what were the sort of deep movements and markings that happened to you in the course of your lifetime, such that you went from a fairly traditional upbringing to being a fairly untraditional lady as you are now. So if that adventure is okay with you, shall we begin?
Absolutely, I'm game. I told you before the show I was prepared to be vulnerable and honest, and there will be things that we'll talk about that it's true. I've never shared. I do try to reflect with my guests. That is the approach to this show, is, you know, basically being just two people, whoever the guest happens to be, having a conversation. And I have always felt that, you know, conversations are not one-sided, and that canned questions, if I have them, the show just goes downhill from there. And I always have a few as backup. I mean, I do my research, but I don't really like to use them because I prefer to just let the conversation flow. So with that said, yes. Go ahead, proceed. I'm not as experienced being interviewed as you are, but I am looking forward to this.
Yeah, right. So the story starts, just very briefly, your story starts in the Midwest someplace, is that correct?
Well, actually, I grew up in Colorado, in Denver, and although I actually didn't know him because I was the youngest in my family, had very little interaction. I'm actually the granddaughter of an evangelical minister in New York City who was, as I understand it, quite the street corner preacher, charismatic, Pentecostal, Assemblies of God. His influence was felt in our family, even though I personally didn't get a chance to interact with him being in another state. I grew up in a family, and this really does have a context to my own experience, especially given, I know, your understanding of mysticism. There's a strong undercurrent of mysticism in my family and in my life, and had quite an influence on me. Within my family, there were different undercurrents of Christianity. My mother was not really charismatic, although she'd been exposed to that. And so we kind of always tried to walk this balance between finding churches that weren't exactly charismatic. So my own path really didn't include that, although I was exposed to it. So...
But your path and your upbringing was Christian, yes?
Oh, very conservative. And because there was that strong tradition of participating in the church, my parents were very much contributors to the church. You know, my dad was the church pianist for a long time. They did a lot of things in the church. And actually, my first church growing up was kind of an early version of a mega church. And what was interesting about that church is the pastor, he ended up, I'm not quite sure what the charges were. I was a child at the time, but he embezzled money from the congregation. And it was a very high profile case in Colorado. And we ended up leaving that church at that time, and I'm sure it was very disillusioning. Even to me, it was shocking, and I think I was in about fourth grade, but I feel that must have had it left its mark on me, because, you know, here was the pastor, someone that was obviously respected, and caught in this situation, in this scandal. And you know, there wasn't a lot of denial. I mean, that can happen where, oh, no, he couldn't have done this, and maybe at first. But, I mean, you really did know that this had happened. So that was probably one of the first things that happened to me. And at that
point... But you remained Christian until...
I did.
Christian until about when?
Well, you know, that's about when my doubts began. And I think that's kind of important because... I was actively Christian, but I was pretty young when I started to doubt. In fact, someone in my family shared a note with me that I wrote as a child, about 11 years old, we think, where I guess the pastor was preaching about hellfire and damnation, and I said, if we're supposed to love our enemies, wouldn't that include Satan? That's a little bit, and of course, you know, being a New Ager, or classified as that now, it's kind of ironic that I would write a note like that, because we're often characterized as, you know, being hidden Satanist or something. But no, at that age, that was not my intent. I think I must have really seen through something, that there was an inconsistency. Mm-hmm. And so to be fair, I really did start to struggle. In my early teens, I would go to, at that point we were at a Calvinist church. We had left the other church, I was, you know, listening to a Calvinist minister, a much different kind of church, and, you know, I was questioning things to myself, but I didn't know how to express it. And it really caused me a lot of anguish, Bob, because the other kids, they'd go to, you know, youth retreats and things like that. I mean, some of them didn't care, but other ones really did. I mean, they were obviously participating in this experience and feeling it with their whole beings, this feeling of commitment and the emotion surrounding it. And I had the hardest time entering into that, and I was really starting to become anguished about my doubt. So I think that, you know, I have to express that as part of my journey. And, you know, it's funny. It was as an adult many years later when I kind of tried to recommit myself to Christianity that I probably felt it the most for a short period
Felt what the most?
What it's like to be an evangelical Christian. I mean,
the positive side.
Yeah, and I'm not saying, I think that that's the important part of this, is a lot of people who come out of evangelical Christianity, there are a lot of atheists. I used to interact with a lot of them online in these forums, and they're very angry. And I have felt the wounds, too. I mean, it's a deep wounding that goes on, and it's not necessarily intentional. You can be in a loving environment, and yet there's a contradiction. There's this love, and it's powerful, and it's real. I have come to realize I have to recognize that they feel the true love of God. It's just that depending on how you incorporate what's being taught, there can be these huge disconnects of distrust, because on the one hand you have this loving God, and then on the other hand you have the God who is wrathful and, you know, would create hell and torture. And I think a lot of times people talk about that on the surface, and you know, they say, oh yeah, Christians believe in hell, or, you know, conservative, but to actually believe in it is a far different experience. To actually believe that people will be tormented for eternity, and to actually fear that yourself, which is the situation I found myself in, it's about the most powerful fear. And yet there's this other aspect of love, and I believe the love of God reaches everybody through every path, and it certainly has reached the Christians. I mean, they are not, they have it, they do. In fact, in some ways, this idea of a personal relationship that they talk about, it's a very powerful thing.
Can you talk about that personal relationship in your life? I'm very curious about there's two feeling statements that you've given me here that I find I really am interested in. What was it like, that personal sense of love and connection? And I'm also very interested in this other side. You said that you yourself feared this hell and damnation. I am very curious about the feeling that was like. But I'm more interested in the love part. Can you talk about that?
You know, I think I felt that more as an adult than when I was younger, because I have to tell you, in my teens, that's what I wanted. I wanted it so badly, Bob. I saw other people had it. I could tell they had it. They weren't faking it. And I wanted it more than anything. And I just couldn't get it. I mean, I wondered, you know, are people really experiencing this at times? You know, I do believe they were. In fact, later in life, I realized they were. But at that, you know, in my teens, and I was still very young, I hadn't really experienced it, and yet I wanted it very badly. Now, I kind of have to skip over. I actually went through a period where I rejected all forms of spirituality. This happened in my later teens. It was at the time when the New Age movement, and it was really called that back then in the late 70s, was coming to the fore, and I was exposed to that, and it intrigued me. And this is where we get into the fear. I started to explore things like meditation, which, I mean, you certainly would understand that, although I wasn't very good at it, but I started to try it. And, you know, I don't even know what book I had at the time. It would have been the late 70s. There are all kinds of books out at that time. And things started to happen, Bob, and it terrified me. Because it was like, oh, my gosh, you know, what if this is demonic? Because that's what we were taught. There's the fear. You know, I felt the love. I felt the connection. Actually, in that case, I started to feel it on the New Age path, which is an irony of my path, is what I had sought that others were feeling in evangelical Christianity, I started to feel it in a different way. But the fear just collapsed it for me. I just couldn't do it anymore. And I don't know that I can even remember everything that happened, except I know that I was terrified. And so I stopped and I dropped everything. In my 20s, I didn't really pursue spiritual things at all. And in my 30s, and this will bring me to the personal relationship with God, it was in my late 30s, I had a frightening medical test. You know, it was a mammogram that had a really scary result. It wasn't your typical bad result. It was a really scary one, what they told me. And so, anyway, without getting into the detail, it woke me up because all of a sudden, the fear, what if I'm going to hell? Because I had rejected, or I really had just put on the shelf my spirituality and my religion, which talked about these fears. And I was shaken to the core because I needed to know. And so I asked God, show me the way. I have never made a more heartfelt plea. And this was even after I discovered that I was okay. I didn't have cancer, although it was scary for a time, short time. It was enough to wake me up. I the classic confronting one's own mortality. And yes, that request, show me the way. I have never asked a more, maybe since then I have, but it was one of the most heartfelt, deeply felt requests I've ever made in my life. And after that, the synchronicity started within about a day. And people started coming into my life that had different points of view. Somebody who was a neighbor just showed up and invited me to coffee, and we started talking about spiritual things. She was not a Christian. She was more of a New Ager and, you know, told me things like, you know, we are really divine beings having a human experience. And, you know, the things that I had put on the shelf from studying my cursory study of the New Age in the 70s started to come back. But then, it's been 10 years now, and this is where it gets a little challenging. I will never know exactly what caused it, but at some point, I started getting more into things like meditation and things like that, although I never was really that skilled at it. But I was just experimenting with different things. And at some point, I just blew wide open. I mean, that was my experience 10 years ago. And I'll never figure it out. I actually hit my head during the time as well. I've since heard that this is not uncommon. In that sense, it's very Dorothy-esque, and I was actually in Kansas at that point. I don't know how to explain it all. I mean, it's going to be hard to describe it. It was a full-fledged mystical experience, let's just put it that way. At one point, I was even connecting with, some kind of spirit guide that was an old woman who was calling me child. There were things that were even predicted it's hard to talk about this sort of thing. It always sounds so implausible when people talk about this sort of thing. But there's so many skeptics out there. But there were things that I couldn't have known. Like one of the things I was told during this was that I would someday write for a great many people without earning a cent. And I was like, how in the heck could I do that? I mean, I was actually having this conversation in a mystical setting. I was in a nature setting. I mean, how is that possible? And I've never talked about this. And I generally don't like to talk about this sort of thing because it's so ego-based, and it's why I haven't talked about it. But it's somewhat important. I think these things do happen to people, and it happened to me. And, it actually came true, and I didn't even know it had come true until I looked backwards and said, oh, my God, that it was the Oprah Forum, which we'll talk about maybe in a little bit, that I wrote for a great many people anonymously and didn't earn a cent. Exactly. And, then it was more vague. I mean, it's not like I had all the answers, but I got the impression that I would be doing other things and that I was going to help people. I did get that. And there was a sense of choice in this. I don't think it was just like, you shall do this. I mean, it wasn't like that. But it was a powerful experience. It really messed me up because here's where we fall into the fear. I mean, it helped me and it messed me up. Once again, because I was seeing these synchronicities, and powerful things were happening, and even worse yet, some kind of a spirit, I just toppled into fear. I mean, absolutely spiraled into fear, and, even had a period where my life was essentially, at least briefly, broken down. I mean, I just really toppled into fear over that. And that's when I fell back into Christianity. Because that I had been oppressed, that I was under demonic influence, and even my family was really worried about me. They had two ministers and their congregations praying for me, or at least one congregation was praying, and another minister who had a lot of experience with Satanism, and they claimed all New Age things and anything like this had to be satanic. And there are still people who love me very much in my family who, don't know what to make of what happened, that it could very well be demonic and that I'm still under demonic influence, although they are loving. I'm very fortunate to be surrounded by loving people in my family who I don't always talk to about everything I'm doing now just because it's hard for them. I don't need them. I know it would be hard for them to accept, and if they find out somehow, I explain it, but I don't go out of my way to do it. So anyway, okay, let me go on.
Well, let's go back to the Christian. You said that this experience kind of fear had somehow pushed you back into Christianity, and
it
there was a
did.
Kind of loving presence
and
in that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
That was amazing, yes. Basically, I ended up with friends in Kansas who were very conservative evangelicals and a mix, too. It was like a women's group around me, not formal, but one was a charismatic, one was, a really conservative, a few of them were very conservative sect where they even didn't wear pants and things and had their hair up. It's very conservative. They weren't Amish, but they were ultra-conservative. Anyway, these people had me on my knees repenting of, you know, because I was in real anguish and I really did feel the love of God at that moment. It really came through, and it, I don't know how do you explain something like that? I mean, later I felt it in a different way. In many ways, in retrospect, I don't think it was that different than what you feel.
Hang on. I'm not going to let you off the hook here.
Okay,
it was
an energy. I mean, I wouldn't have called it that then. It was a release. Christianity is about surrender. There's something very powerful there. It was total surrender. You put all your cares on this other person. You kind of, I don't like to say you relinquish responsibility, because it's not exactly that, but it's like that in a way. That's what repentance feels like. And I just felt this tremendous acceptance that I was loved, and I didn't feel the fear. And the interesting thing, and I would love to write about this, is I started seeing Christian synchronicities. I started seeing Christian synchronicities that would confirm my path, like, you know, references to lost sheep, because I was a lost sheep who came back in. I have since, many years later, talked to Christians about this. They do see synchronicities that confirm their path, that bring them closer to the love of God. And although sometimes you can see dark synchronicities, which is kind of interesting. If you fall into fear, there can be some dark things that are coincidental, that are odd. But
sure.
But anyway, leaving the fear aside,
back,
I was committed. I went to Bible study then. You know, I went to church.
Well.
And unfortunately, that was the end of it. It didn't last that long because I'm such a thinker. Well, get this. I'm in this Bible study, and I'm asking all these questions because, you know, we're studying the Bible. And so I'm a questioner. And at one point, these women, I guess the leader was leaving or something, and they asked me to lead the Bible study. And I said, why in the world would you want me to lead the Bible study? I've got so many questions. I mean, like, why would you have someone like that who's, you know, asking tough questions, not just, you know, what does this mean? Although I would ask that, but, you know, how do you reconcile this and that? And but they didn't care. They thought that I was really thoughtful in looking at it. But it didn't matter. The questions started to surface, and it was about hell. And I finally went to the minister because I was becoming very anguished over this hell question again. You know, how could there be hell? The basic question. And when I went to the minister, I just happened to get a minister who didn't believe in hell and who told me that the senior minister at the church was starting not to believe in hell either. And I was astonished because that was not the answer I expected. And so that's, and I even went back to the Bible study and I said, did you know that such and such minister, I confided to the one of the senior ladies, doesn't believe in hell? And she said, oh, yes, that came up during her interview. And this church was not so conservative that they didn't allow women to teach. A conservative, there are churches that are like that. They don't allow women to teach. And they might even say, well, see, there's a good reason. but in any case, that then unraveled. It was the doubt again. And but what it did for me, not long after that, I had to make the decision whether to bring my child to the church because he was getting old enough to go to Sunday school, you know, where you would actually learn something and not just sing or something. And I held the child brochure in my hand, and I read it. And I just, in that moment, something snapped, Bob, and I'm like, I can't teach this. I can't do it. And that was the last time I ever was in that church. In fact, that was the last time I ever went to any evangelical church, except, you know, when I've gone with family on occasion, just at Christmas or something. But, you know, at that
So you had a sense here of for a short while, there was this sense of surrender and a sense of really being supported.
Oh, yes, I felt it. And the most amazing aspect of it is a lot of us report, you know, the spiritual experience is magical. I mean, we know this. We felt it. And that same magic was there. And it was so much as if, you know, whatever you choose, this is my interpretation of it now. I had chosen to take that path at that time with all my heart. And what you choose, God will meet you there. And I think it's a really powerful lesson because it's so easy, and I do it too, where we'll judge. And, you know, I still have a lot of problems with the hell thing, and, you know, it's really teaching children that. You know, I feel like it would help us if we had less division in our teachings, but we all have to awaken in our own way. And see, even in that I'm judging. You know, it's so easy to judge, and yet there is an awakening within that path. I have seen it in my family. I have talked to people in my family who feel tremendous love and, you know, transcendent love because, you know, at least one that I've talked to quite a bit is a charismatic, and they really feel it in the mystical realm.
And it sounds like there was considerable awakening for you at that moment when you woke up in Christianity. And it sounds like it was a lovely experience.
Yeah, it exists in there. And it really mirrored what I felt outside of it, too. I mean, I think, to be fair, before I spiraled into fear, I was entering into a similar kind of energy of love. I mean, where, you know, you just feel this ultimate acceptance, I guess, is what it is. And so I had the rare opportunity to feel it in both ways. But with the Christian experience, it was the surrender. I mean, that's the best word I can give is you know, you just surrender everything. That's what it's about. And that then left an opening, as best I can characterize it, for the love to come in. And then, you know, I didn't really feel it then. It came later. But this feeling of wanting to serve God. Now, in the Christian setting, that's more disempowering. There's this concept of worship, but it's not really felt that way. And I think so much of this is based on perception, Bob. And, you know, when you're on the outside looking in, it looks like it must feel, you know, so disempowering to say things like I'm obedient to God and stuff like that. But for the people in it, it's their way of serving God. And, you know, now that I look at it years later, where I am now, I probably, more than a lot of New Agers, or if I want to, I have to use that term very broad, I probably use that term more than anyone, because Christians use that to call us that. And yeah. I was brought up with that term, that, oh, you know, the New Agers believe this, the New Agers believe that. And so I don't have any problem using the term, but most New Agers don't use it. In any case, it's so true. Now I'm losing my train of thought, but
okay. Let me help you out
ahead.
Here.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I'm kind of just babbling.
You know, like, so what you've shared with us is that you had, you know, the there was a kind of longing when you were a teenager and longing for the sense of love, and that really didn't hit you until after this medical problem, and you began to feel it, and it sounds like it went pretty quickly. You know, that you had this sense of support and surrender, but it sounds like it fairly quickly your questions about whether there's a hell and some of the questions about the Bible, they weren't exactly met with open heart and open mind, and that sounds like it really discouraged you. and it sort of brought you down from this thing, so that you had learned to open up to God, but then there was this kind of closing within the tradition to this openness that you yourself were feeling. Have I kind of heard you?
It's very true, and you know, I think it really is important to emphasize that within the evangelical church, you really put the Bible on a pedestal. I mean, you know this well, I'm sure. The Bible is higher than personal revelation. The Bible is the highest authority. In fact, in later years, I question, you know, that it's essentially idolatry, because you're putting something physical above the guidance of God. So, you know, that's what I question, is that I think that I had this experience of, and let's not forget the term forgiveness, because that's a big part of it. When you surrender, there is something very powerful to feeling forgiven, and I felt that I needed to be forgiven because I had dabbled in what was characterized as, you know, the occult. And
right.
And so I think it's important to use that term as well, because that's really important that, you know, there's that feeling of the clean slate that, you know, whatever your past, you know, you're forgiven. And so, and I know people, they bandy these terms about, I mean, it's so obvious. Yeah, of course it's about that. And yet to actually feel it is a different matter. And I think it's just so amazing that the mysticism that you experience in your life, which I know is an area of your study, I am so fascinated that I had, again, you know, these confirmations that confirmed that path. And what that tends to do, Bob, is if you are on a dogmatic path where, you know, the Bible is 100% inerrant, and you start seeing confirmations of that path, it actually tends to make you even, you know, stronger in that conviction.
Sure. Sure.
And it's sort of a puzzling thing. Now, they will explain it as, well, those things are coming from two sources. That if I'm seeing confirmations now, that must be coming from the devil, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything is, you know, there are those two sides. And you know, it's funny, some of the things I question, and, you know, the fact that the ministers revealed to me, or actually one of them I didn't talk to, but I was told that minister was doubting, I think that's fascinating. Because one of my questions I wonder about, it seems like within that type of dogmatic faith where you have all these things you have to believe, you know, the entire Bible, the more you question, the less you really feel it. That is what I really think is true, and that there are doubters there, but they're afraid to really express it. And some of them can simply just put it on hold. I don't know how they do it, but I've seen it. They just trust. In fact, that's how it's been explained to me. You know, something you're just not going to understand. And that's true even on our spiritual path. I mean, I think there's some pretty really difficult situations in the world I have a hard time understanding. And I have to trust now. And so that's one of the ways. But I do think it's interesting that there is this, there are doubters. You know, there can definitely be doubt within those circles, but somehow they find their way. They either find their way back to the love of God, or they're miserable, or they leave. I mean, I think that's probably or find some other less, which is what I did. I then went to another church, two different churches. One was a really open-minded church, which was Disciples of Christ. It was still within Christianity, and it was a very liberal Disciples of Christ church, and they preached a completely different view of the gospel. And then I also went to the Unity Church for a while, although mostly, you know, I would go to, like, discussion groups. So I replaced the Bible study group with a discussion group where we started studying, you know, different spiritual books and talking about this. So anyway, I did, you know, find these outlets. There were other churches that were out there. Although I will say the first time...
I'm curious. Was there something led you, what made it possible or necessary for you to leave the fold of Christianity all told? And I'm curious, was there an experience? Was there a kind of transformative moment? What happened that you finally left the fold entirely?
Well, again, the first step was the children's brochure. I mean, it doesn't get any more simple than that, is how you would explain the faith to a child. And that was the most that was the trigger for me. And then after that, it was more gradual. And it was also experiential, because during that period, I seemed very open to mystical experience for a while. And in fact, it was at times it could be destabilizing. I mean, as I got a little farther down the path of exploring other things again, I mean, I had talked to you about in another show where I got kind of stuck in a meditation. I mean, that had never happened to me. I was like feeling oneness with the sun. I mean, that was amazing. I mean, the whole history of the earth, I could feel it. It was timeless. And then I was expanding. I mean, words, I can't quite, it sounds so trite because I've heard so many people explain things like this. But when it's the first time that it's happened to you, it was really dramatic for me. And at that point, that's when I started
to
learn how to
integrate
that.
Was that getting stuck in meditation, the one that was transformative?
Yeah, well, I mean, right, I had, that was another moment. I mean, that was a powerful meditative experience. And
But lead us through the steps that led you out
I'm not sure I can tell you. In fact, that's an interesting question. It was many years, Bob. I mean, I think that I began to experience that same love in a different way. I started to study more. I mean, although I was never quite the scholar like the path you took where, you know, you really studied a lot of things very deeply, but I did start to read more. And, you know, then I got involved with online groups. I mean, I feel that was important as well, because I started to talk with people online. I was sitting in Kansas, and although I had some people around me I could talk with, you know, having access to these groups worldwide are more significant. Like at one point there was a church, the Honolulu Church of Light. It had some influence on my path. And, you know, these were just all unconditionally loving messages. And I wish I could say, I mean, the most powerful experiences were some of those mystical experiences about 8 to 10 years ago, but they were also destabilizing for me. I didn't know how to integrate it. And I think I had to shut the door on that to some degree because I didn't know how to navigate through those experiences. I don't know if there are, sometimes I speculate, and this is very academic, are there genetic things that make us a little more inclined to that kind of experience? Because in my family, there is a very strong pattern of powerful mystical experiences, because that's what charismatic Christianity is. And I entered into that in a different way. As far as the meditation I got stuck in, I mean, I was sitting in a room and someone was banging at the door. I mean, had to get me out of it kind of thing. And I mean, I really did kind of get carried away. And so that's when I think I had to find balance, and it took many years. I mean, and I'm still learning, you know, and then the big, the whole discussions on Oprah, I mean, you know, that then went into a period, I guess about, I don't know, about 6 years ago, where I started engaging with evangelicals in their forums and asking tough questions because I really felt it was the parenting thing, Bob. That's what really got me, is that I felt that, you know, there were some really powerful fears being taught to children. And so I started kind of, and not necessarily in the best of ways, quite honestly, getting into these debates online. And I feel at that point, I was exposing my wounds. I mean, I have to say I was working through wounds, although many of the questions I asked may have been valid. Same thing on the Oprah forum. You know, that was the point where those posts were very visible. I mean, at one point, I was totally anonymous, and yet I had shown one of my posts to somebody who was a minister who was a heretic, that he's been on this show, Carlton Pearson. And at some point, I found myself at the ABC Nightline debate on the existence of Satan, raising my hand because I was in the audience. And even though, get this, I had almost complete laryngitis when I went because I was so terrified to speak. And yet I was ready to speak. But, I mean, it became more visible because I did all this writing online. And, you know, I even talked to the producer of ABC Nightline, and she could see that I was uncomfortable revealing who I was, even, because I'd been so anonymous. But she could also see, I mean, at one point, she saw that I had a post on the front page of Oprah, and she said, wow. I mean, there it was. And I said, see, look. And you know, but it was anonymous. So it was more just a, you know, wow kind of thing, that's a pretty cool place to be, but it was really easy to do anonymously. And so my journey now has been more, I'm still on a journey, Bob. I mean,
well,
I'm still learning. I am, well,
absolutely.
Of course we all are, but I mean, when you ask, you know, what was that huge moment of transformation? It's still going on.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm hearing, and it's interesting, what I'm hearing is that your path out of a kind of fixity and a particular way to think, your path was one of kind of slowly building towards another way to think. And it sounds like much of it was conducted publicly. This forum that you did and the Oprah thing, talking to people, going on this Nightline thing. It's you know, and the interesting thing is every teacher knows, you learn more by when you teach than you do as a student.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of frame it for yourself. And so by asking the questions and putting yourself out and framing things in a new way publicly, you were in effect talking yourself into a whole new way to think about things.
I was, and in many ways, I'm still doing it. I mean, this show, I rarely come to this show, I would probably question anyone who claims to have all the answers, we all would, but the way that I am genuinely, you know, when I talk to people like you, I genuinely, just as you're curious about my path, I'm just as curious, and I'm still seeking that fuller experience. I mean, I think that those mystical experiences that I had many years ago, which were part, I mean, they were important. And, you know, I can't, it's hard for me to fully even understand how important, but I know they were very important in my life. I'm still figuring out, having once experienced that love, or not just once, but that opening, which you know about, you know, I'm not in that place all the time now, not even close, although the opening is still there. And, you know, there is a higher sense of awareness, Bob. There is no question. It's like a door opened in my mind. I'm a different person than I was 15 years ago. And I felt it on both paths, which is probably pretty rare, is, you know, when I was having my Christian experience, that same awareness was there, that mystical awareness, you know, where you are aware of the synchronicities, for example, you know, that same mystical awareness with the open door was there. And, you know, my life now is a much richer experience, but it's still an exploration. And I tend to be resistant to dogma as well, even the dogma of the New Age. And it does exist. I've actually had people walk out of my talks when I start to question if they're becoming afraid of the law of attraction, for example, because I see fear in that area. Mm-hmm. This is why this show mm-hmm. is about fear. And I'm not saying that co-creation isn't something that I really have seen evidence of, but there's something more to it. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people falling into fear over this, like, watch out, mm-hmm. you know, almost like Santa Claus. So, you know, if you better watch out if you're thinking the wrong thing, kind of. And and that it concerns me, because I am very, very conscious of how fear can really skew. I mean, look what happened. I mean, it spiraled me down more than once in a pretty dysfunctional way.
Your worries about fear and the way that you've oriented your show of going beyond fear, to some extent, you know, the path that you had to come out of was
yeah.
framed around fear. It's the fear of the devil, the fear of hell, the fear of damnation. And that's a huge thing that you had to confront. And so for you, fear has played, you know, coming out of fear, letting go of the fantasy of hell, or whatever, however you phrase that, you know, letting go of the image of hell, that has been for you part of the challenge here of how do you let that fear that gets instilled in you so early on in the Christian path, how do you let that one go? Which makes all the sense in the world to me. That's been what your life has been in part about. So I think the way that you frame the show is related to this beginning of your path.
Absolutely. Because, you know, fear, when I was in it, it's a form of bondage, and it really did limit me. And I tend to see it on different paths now. You know, although I have to say, nothing was more powerful than that fear of hell. I mean, when you really believe it, I mean, it's horrible, Bob. I mean, really. I mean, I think people tend to, they make a caricature of hell. You know, it's like a joke if you're looking from the outside in. But the anguish, in fact, if anything drives me, you know, I'm somewhat conflicted sometimes. You know, should I be questioning a belief system? Because I still do it. There's no question I do it. But then I see the anguish, because even if you're not in it, you have to worry about loved ones who care about you worrying, you know, that you might be in eternal torment. And they have all their debates, too. Like, is there this, you know, this eternal security thing where once you're a Christian, you're going to heaven no matter what. I mean, that is very reassuring, but they don't all believe that. And so I can't overemphasize just how much anguish that kind of powerful fear-based belief can cause. Even when you're
certainly caused you. That's what I'm hearing.
Certainly did. And I have heard stories of other people, you know, even if they're concerned about loved ones, you know, they may feel very confident in their faith, but there's always that concern about others. And that's what creates the evangelists. I mean, that's why it's evangelical, because they really are trying to save people because it's a horrible fate that they see. And I wish more people understood that, because there is a love. There's love at the core. I mean, there's this fear, and yet, you know, they love you enough to want to share this with
you. Yeah, what I'm hearing you say is that there's a kind of framing of life around the notion of sin and damnation. And so
yeah.
the love that I hear you pointing to is, if life is framed in sin and damnation, that it is an extremely loving act to say to somebody, you don't quite realize what you're risking here. I'm going to help
yes.
you. I mean, it really is a kind of, you're right. I can sense the sort of the compassion and love in the middle of all that. I think the piece that most of our listeners, and certainly the piece that I hesitate about, is that it's framed by something that seems so loaded and so almost unrealistically anguish-causing. You know, there's a kind of hugeness of the vision of sin and damnation here that,
yeah.
you know, I mean, it's lovely to say I'm going to help you out of that, but boy, what a picture that you have to carry about the nature of life and the nature of the future and what happens to you after you die and judgment and wow, that's a huge load to lay on folks. I bet that was part of where your own doubts came up. But how do you communicate that to a child? You know, this sweet, smiling face,
yeah.
And you say, well, really, you're...
Exactly.
Yeah.
How do you? Now,
yeah.
There's the key, though, isn't it, Bob? I mean, I have studied, you know, sometimes I think I should go back to school, although maybe a different kind, and maybe I am in school anyway, we all are, but I am so fascinated by this as a psychological thing. You know, what is going on? Because that is, I'll tell you what, here's something I haven't conveyed. When you wake up to that, Bob, it's like, oh, my God, how? How could I believe something like that?
Oh, when you wake up to the
couldn't possibly be true. You know.
Yeah. Well,
I mean,
I get it.
The horror, and it's like it's so outrageous. I mean, how in the world did I ever believe that? And that's a shocking part. But that's really important for me to express. I don't know when I went through that exactly, but there was a point I went through that in the last 10 years, maybe. I don't know. Actually, I still think about it. You know, what was going on in my head that I could really believe that? And people do. I mean, it's such a powerful fear. And my only theory, there are two reasons. One, a lot of people are indoctrinated as children. And when beliefs are instilled from a very young age, it has a powerful influence on your psyche. And so that's one way of looking at it. And the other way is when people come to Christianity in adulthood, it is almost always when they've been through a very hard time of trial. That was true for me. I came to it. And when they are at their most down, that tends to be when, and it rescues them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something to that. And there's something in our psyches that then make us believe the most amazingly horrendous things, unfortunately, and just accept it. And yet,
well,
because
you know,
the book
says it doesn't make sense. There's a thought that I want to bring in here, which is that I think one of the things I've discovered in my own life is that I have an ability to take a feeling, especially a pain or an anxiety, that's about something over here on the left. And then I'm seeing something over here on the right. For example, I'm feeling anxious about a class that I'm teaching. And so I get upset with my wife, and it has nothing to do with class. Or I feel upset about, you know, something that somebody said to me, they hurt my feelings. And so I'm sure the paper that I'm writing will not work. You know, and I'm feeling terrible about that. I'm so stupid. So there's a kind of display. It's called displacement. And it seems to me that when you grow up, all of us grow up with a certain level of pain. And I think what the Christian image of hell and damnation is doing is it gives you this huge monster, as it were, to be afraid of, and allows us to apply all of our fears and all of our pain on this huge monster, and it gives us a kind of language to think about the pain that we feel. And I wonder if it's working for folks, and obviously Christianity works for many people, I wonder if it works for folks as a way to give folks something specific to be afraid of, as opposed to the general and abstract, you know, fears and whatnot that we have with our parents and our siblings and, you know, I wonder if it's doing something like that, and if it's a way for folks to think about their own pain in a way that there's an answer now. There's a safety in this. So I wonder. It's just a thought that's occurring to me here, and I don't want to impose on you.
Well, we're about to the end of the live show, but I do want to say one thing to that I think is important. Is it's not just your personal pain, it's the world's pain. Part of it is, it's so hard to come up with an explanation for why so many horrendous things happen in the world. And people are looking for that explanation. And if you can project it onto a devil and take it personally, too, you know, when you do something that you're not happy with, whatever it might be, you can project it onto the devil. and same thing in the world, it's a kind of release. It's kind of like in Christianity. Okay, we're going to take this into the archive for just a minute, and then we're going to wrap up. But it's like a get-out-of-jail-free card.
That's exactly what I'm hearing. I was going to say the same thing, yeah.
Are you really? It's what it is. And there is a beauty to it. You know, I've had trouble accepting karma. You know, the whole notion of karma. You know, Christians are totally free from that. I mean, you get a get-out-of-jail-free card. I have had Christians tell me that the thought of reincarnating is absolutely horrifying, that if they discover that that is true, that is just going to be the most, you know, horrifying realization possible, not just because it would contradict their belief, but just, you know, any of that. And so anyway, this is a very complex conversation. I mean, we could probably go on for another hour, but it's an interesting, I think that I feel like I truly, to use a Christian term, am blessed to have had the journey I did, which was not easy. There were aspects of it, particularly during that rather tumultuous period about 8 to 10 years ago when I was in a lot of turmoil.
Yeah.
It was
well,
not
let me
easy.
Say this. Let me say this before we sign off, and that is, I want to compliment you for your courage. I mean, it takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of balls to walk from a very easy, comfortable system the way you did, and to keep asking the questions that you did, even though they were dangerous for you, even though they were dangerous for your community. It takes a lot of strength and courage to find your own way out. And I also realize that it's the path that you've taken ends up being a much lonelier path. You don't have a zillion people hanging around you at a megachurch. You know, you're on your own now, and that takes much more grown-up maturity to be able to handle that. And I compliment you for it. I know how difficult it is, and it's you know, we lose something when we walk away from a path like that, and we sort of know that as we walk away, and yet we have to do it because it is the truth and it is what is real for us. So I compliment you for that, Susan, and compliment you for keeping the show going as well.
Well, thank you, and I will say it's so funny because what you described, I'm not ready to write this book yet, but it's sitting there with me at some point, and is that there's a book that I'm writing called Spiritual Refugee, and it's my memoir. Yeah, and that's exactly what you just described. In fact, I mean, that's what it's like. It's and that book is a ways off. I'm not going to be ready to write that just yet. And those are my next step. You know, how do I come full circle and have the courage to write about some of this, you know, not anonymously as me? And I'm doing it through radio. I mean, radio, I'm finding it's a different path. It's a different path to talking about these topics.
Yeah, I'm hearing that this is part of your path, and it's an interesting path,
but,
and it helps other people find their own way. And I think it's lovely.
Yeah, and I do, and thank you for that, Bob. And I know that, you know, this show reaches people on all different parts of their own journey. I think, you know, there are so many people who doubt secretly, and they don't know who to talk to. And, you know, it is my hope, if anything, that this show will really help people to reflect and to understand, too, that I love how you put it in your book, that there's this human messiness, I think, somewhere you talk about that. And it's true. You know, our journeys, and they don't always just come together, you know. I'm still going on 10 years here where I'm still... And, of course, we're all refining it, but I feel I still have some pretty big steps to take.
You know, that's one of the things I want to say about my own life, which is, you know, I've been doing this now since 1969, so 44 years. And it was just 3 days ago I had another major step for myself. It's like, oh, my God, I've been doing that all these years? And it's both gratifying and exciting, but it's also stunningly long-term what we're doing. You know, it's like there's always stuff to be learned. There's always freedoms to be won and steps to be taken. So it doesn't stop, and that's amazing to me. It's still inspiring.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have to give you a compliment here, too, is that, you know what I appreciate so much about you is that I mean, you have this rich context that you bring to the table here, and yet when you really come to the table, you're Bob. You're Bob having a journey, and, you know, you make it so easy to talk to you. You know, you are so approachable. Now I'm even tearing up a little. I mean, that's how much I feel this. I really do, that, you know, what you bring as simply Bob is a tremendous gift. And
well,
I think
you
create, you allow people like me to open up. And thank you. Thank you for that.
And thank you for opening up back to me, because it is interesting to talk to you and to know a little more about your past. So next time when I'm on your show, I'll know who I'm talking to.
Well, good. I'm sure that we'll continue, given the way our conversations go. And,
yes.
And you know, I look forward to many in the future. The more context we know about each other, the deeper, you know, as you've used the term, go deeper together. I know that's one of the terms you've talked about. I mean, that is a truly real thing, and that's what we're doing. And I appreciate that. So
well,
I do look
good.
Forward
well,
to the
been,
next
this
time.
Well, this has been a joy, and I'm really glad we had a chance to do it, Susan. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, thank you. All right. Well, take care, Bob.
All right, ciao.
All right. And with that said, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up today's show just with a note about the next show, which is actually going to be April 1st on April Fool's Day. Mark David Gerson is coming back on the show. He hasn't come on in a while. He's one of the original guests, a very old friend of mine, and he is quite a brilliant writer. He's written books to assist writers, as well as quite a powerful fiction series, and he's now a screenwriter, and he's getting into directing as well. But what we're going to talk about on April Fool's Day at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, is the wisdom of the fool, which will be a very interesting topic, because it just so happens Mark David has written about this concept in the past. And we're really going to explore this at a deep level, how the symbolism of the fool, which may be doing things that are viewed conventionally foolish in society, can actually be very wise. And what does the fool have to teach us? So this will be an interesting talk and perfectly timed for April Fool's Day on April 1st, our next show. So thank you so much for being here today. He's left, but I do want to thank Dr. Robert Foreman again for being here, and I actually found today's show to be rather cathartic for me as well, that it helps to talk about these things. And I hope that if you are a person, whatever your journey, if you're experiencing doubt, or, you know, if you want to reflect upon some of these deep concepts, you can find that outlet. And it's so very important. And, you know, I just honor all of you who are listening in whatever path you're on, whatever part of your journey you're on, and many of us have been through times of turmoil. I have, and I know that can be challenging, that we can have health challenges. There's so many things that we can go through in this life. But, you know, it's all about that experience, and I know more and more of us, whatever the path, we're really awakening to that unconditional love that is there for us. And there are powerful experiences that I know in my own case will go far beyond this life. I can only begin to glimpse them, although I will say, you know, I only look forward to, you know, whatever awaits, because I think it's only going to get better. And I know many of us are feeling that way. So anyway, thank you so much for being here today, and I will see you next time.